Imagine a single week where a 50-meter steel rocket blowing up in the ocean actually makes everyday investors billions of dollars.
Right.
And like an outbreak of global peace in the Middle East secretly terrifies the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, it sounds like fiction, but here we are.
Exactly. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We have a massive stack of sources for you today. And our mission is to help you make sense of a truly historic week in June 2026.
It really has been historic. The sheer volume of data we're looking at is it's staggering.
Totally. We're pulling from tech market reports covering SpaceX's, record-breaking IPO and their Starship Flight 12. We've got articles on new AI learning tools like Speechify. There's this fascinating regulatory guide on the strict compliance rules for financial broadcasting, plus an intellectual AI breakdown of the Federal Reserve's latest curveball.
And don't forget the new IEA report on global oil demand.
All right, the IEA report. So we are going to connect the dots for you between the explosion of capital in the commercial space race, the AI tools that are like fundamentally changing how we process information, and the massive macroeconomic forces from interest rates to global shipping lanes that are quietly dictating the future of all of it.
Yeah, it's all incredibly interconnected.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the literal liftoff.
Yeah, the SpaceX IPO, they're trading under the ticker symbol SPCX on the Nasdaq now. And I mean, the sheer scale of the capital involved here has completely reset expectations for public market debuts.
Oh, absolutely.
So they priced the stock at $135 a share,
Okay.
and it closed its first day at $160.95. That is a 19.2% jump right out of the gate.
Wow.
It gave SpaceX a valuation over $2.1 trillion at the closing bell. And, at one point intraday, it actually hit $176.52. That pushed its market cap to $2.8 trillion.
Wait, $2.8 trillion. That officially surpasses Amazon?
Yeah.
That is staggering. I mean, just to think about that number.
It's the largest IPO in stock market history. They raised $75 billion by selling over 555 million shares. But what makes this completely unprecedented is the timing.
Right, the physical rocket.
Exactly. At the exact same time, the stock is just ripping upward on the Nasdaq. Starship Flight 12 is physically up in the air over the Gulf of Mexico.
Literally simultaneous.
Yeah. The financial engineering and the physical engineering were happening at the exact same moment.
And from everything I've read in our sources, the physical engineering of Flight 12 was a massive success, well, at least for the ship itself.
Right, the upper stage.
Yeah, it nailed a target splashdown using just two engines instead of the planned three. It passed this very aggressive aerodynamic flap-slap load test. And that new V3 hull proved incredibly robust. Like, we didn't see any of those scary burn-throughs on the heat shield like we saw in the earlier V2 models.
Yeah, the telemetry confirmed the V3 architecture is just a massive leap forward. However, the mission did have significant hardware failures.
Right. It wasn't perfect.
No, not at all. The booster flip and boost back maneuver completely failed. Observers noted that the hot staging maneuver.
Which is where the ship's engines ignite while it's still physically attached to the booster, right?
Exactly. It was just far too violent this time. It kicked the booster in the wrong direction, causing the fuel to slosh really heavily. So the engines ended up sucking in gaseous propellant instead of liquid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the relight failed, and the booster was just destroyed in the ocean. Plus, one vacuum Raptor engine failed on the way up, which prevented them from testing an in-space relight.
Which brings me to my pushback on this entire market reaction.
Okay.
I look at this IPO and it feels like the financial mechanics are mirroring the rocket's hot staging maneuver.
How do you mean?
Well, the retail investors provide the initial booster thrust, right? But then the options market lights its engines while still attached. It forces market makers to buy stock and creates this massive secondary explosion of upward momentum. Because, I mean, Morningstar put the fundamental fair value of this stock at just $63.
Right, a huge gap.
Yeah. So are retail investors just caught up in the absolute awe of seeing a 50-meter steel tower survive atmospheric reentry? Or is the market accurately pricing in the fact that SpaceX just spent $60 billion in an all-stock transaction to acquire the AI coding agent Cursor from xAI?
Well, the market is certainly attempting to price in that pivot. By acquiring Cursor, SpaceX is basically telling Wall Street that they aren't just an aerospace company anymore.
They're an AI company.
Exactly. They are a custom AI enterprise building models that can write flawless, complex engineering code. But You know, that long-term narrative doesn't actually explain the immediate violent price action that sent the stock to $160.
Right. The math doesn't add up for a single day.
No, it doesn't. The gap between Morningstar's $63 a fundamental valuation and the actual trading price is driven by the structural mechanics of the IPO itself.
The mechanics.
Yes. First, SpaceX offered a microscopic 4% public float.
Oh, wow. So there are very few shares actually circulating in the open market compared to the multi-trillion dollar size of the company.
Exactly. And they gave an unusually huge chunk of that tiny float to everyday people.
Right. A massive 22.5% allocation went directly to retail investors.
Which is unheard of.
Yeah. Typically, in a large U.S. listing, retail might get, what, 5 to 10%?
Yeah, around there. So you have this incredibly constrained supply of shares held tightly by highly enthusiastic individuals who just refuse to sell.
Because they love the company.
Right. Then you introduce the derivatives market. On day one, 1.8 million options contracts traded on SPCX.
Wow.
And when a retail investor buys a call option, which is essentially a leveraged bet that the stock will go up, the market maker who sells them that option has to hedge their own risk.
Right. They can't just take the other side of the bet naked.
Exactly. They hedge it by immediately buying the underlying stock. It creates a relentless gamma squeeze. The market makers are forced to aggressively buy a stock that has almost no available supply, which drives the price up completely independent of the fact that, you know, SpaceX's deep space division is currently losing billions of dollars.
Man, that is wild. So SpaceX is throwing billions at an AI coding agent to write perfect rocket code seamlessly. But down here on Earth, there is a massive friction point.
Oh, absolutely.
Like when everyday people use AI to learn, it's entirely frictionless. But the second a financial professional tries to use those same tools to talk to their clients, they slam into a massive human-built wall of regulation.
Yeah, the contrast is jarring. The sources detail an absolute explosion of AI tools focused on audio learning platforms like Speechify, Listen Later, Monica, NoteGPT, and QuizGecko.
We have moved far beyond those old robotic text-to-speech generators.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, Speechify is a perfect example. It was created by Cliff Weitzman, who is a dyslexia advocate, and it just won a 2026 Apple Design Award.
Yeah.
It has over 50 million users right now. You can take a dense 20-page financial report on SpaceX's IPO, and in under a minute, this AI turns it into a dynamic, natural-sounding, multi-host audio experience.
Incredible.
It fundamentally democratizes how we consume complex data because, like, anyone can generate a highly produced educational show on demand.
Right. And what's fascinating here is the collision between this instant, frictionless technological capability and the slow, incredibly rigid reality of financial compliance.
Yes. Two totally different worlds.
A retail investor can use Speechify to instantly generate audio about breaking news. But if a registered financial firm like a wealth management group or an RIA wants to discuss that exact same news, they hit a serious regulatory bottleneck.
And for those tracking at home, an RIA is a registered investment advisor. They are legally bound to act in their clients' best financial interests.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the guide from the podcast consultant. Any audio content an RIA puts out is legally classified as retail communication. They are governed by strict compliance laws overseen by FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority.
Which mandates rigorous supervision and pre-approval of everything they say publicly. A host cannot simply go off the cuff and make a casual, unscripted prediction about a stock or, you know, an interest rate.
Right.
Because a single offhand promise of returns can trigger a massive regulatory audit.
So we have AI that can instantly generate highly engaging, lifelike audio in seconds. But if a regulated firm wants to publish a show, human compliance officers still have to manually review the content to prevent a fine or RAW violation.
Yeah, that's the reality.
Are these two speeds of innovation, the instant AI generation and the manual human review, inevitably going to crash into each other?
Well, the industry has actually developed a very specific manual workaround to survive that crash.
Okay, what is it?
According to the compliance experts in our sources, the solution is the structured outline. A financial firm cannot submit vague bullet points to a compliance officer.
Why not?
If a host just writes down, discuss SpaceX, the compliance team has zero visibility into what financial claims the host might actually make on microphone. It takes forever to approve because the inherent risk of a violation is just too high.
Okay, but if vague bullets are bad, why not just write a full script? Like, why not have the host write out every single word they're going to say, get it stamped by compliance, and just read it?
Because audience retention completely collapses when hosts read verbatim scripts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the data in our sources shows that finance executives average about 34 minutes of listening for a natural, structured interview. But if a host sounds stiff, like they are just reading a firm's legal terms and conditions or droning through an earnings report, that highly sophisticated audience tunes out
We
immediately.
can smell the legal caution.
Exactly. They have spent their entire careers in corporate boardrooms where heavily prepared, scripted remarks signal caution and a lack of transparency.
So the structured outline acts as the Goldilocks zone.
Precisely.
It maps out the exact thesis, the specific data points, the transition questions, and the call to action. It gives the human compliance officer the full arc of the argument to approve, which cuts the review time in half while still allowing the host to sound conversational on the mic.
And we can't forget the disclaimers.
Oh, right.
AFIN Array rules strictly dictate that regulatory disclaimers must be spoken aloud in the audio and written out in the show notes. One does not substitute for the other.
Wow.
A firm has to pre-script that legal block entirely and get it approved so it functions as permanent boilerplate.
It is wild. You have a $2.8 trillion space company fueling its valuation with AI, while the analysts trying to talk to their clients about it are agonizing over the exact phrasing of a structured outline just to keep the regulators happy.
It's quite the paradox.
But whether you are trying to fund a $75 billion IPO or build out a compliant media infrastructure for your finance firm, it all requires one fundamental thing: capital.
Capital, always.
And the cost of that capital just experienced a massive shock.
Yeah, the macro mechanics of the Federal Reserve are shifting the ground under all of
You
this.
talk about it.
The June 2026 Federal Open Market Committee meeting just concluded, and this was highly anticipated because it was the first meeting chaired by the new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh. The Fed opted to hold their benchmark interest rate steady at a range of 3.50% to 3.75%.
Which, I mean, the market expected that.
Yes.
But it was the dot plot that caused absolute chaos.
Yes.
And the dot plot is the chart where every Fed official anonymously plots exactly where they think interest rates are heading over the next few years.
And it revealed a decisively hawkish pivot. Back in March, the consensus among these officials leaned heavily toward rate cuts.
Oh, yeah, everybody thought cuts were coming.
Right. But at this June meeting, 9 of the 18 voting members projected at least one rate hike before the end of the year.
A hike.
Yeah, and 6 of those officials actually penciled in 2 rate hikes. They are projecting tighter monetary policy because they had to significantly upgrade their inflation forecasts. They now see headline inflation hitting 3.6% by year-end and core inflation hitting 3.3%.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Kevin Warsh, the new chair, broke decades of Federal Reserve tradition.
He did.
He outright refused to submit his own dot on the plot.
Yeah.
He left his personal projection entirely blank.
Which is unheard of.
To me, this is like sitting at a high-stakes poker table where everyone else is forced to show their cards and the dealer just smiles and refuses to turn his over.
That's a great way to put it.
Does Warsh withholding his dot signal a total philosophical overhaul of how the Fed communicates? Or is he just hedging his bets because he is looking at the American consumer and realizing he is trapped? Because we just saw the Core Retail Control Group, which measures the kind of consumer spending that feeds directly into GDP calculations, jump 0.7%, totally smashing expectations.
Well, Warsh has historically advocated for a more rules-based, data-dependent approach, relying much less on forward guidance.
Okay.
By withholding his dot, he is deliberately removing his personal forecast as a crutch for Wall Street. He is forcing the market to focus on the incoming data.
Stop looking at me. Look at the numbers.
Exactly. And the market reaction to all of this was violent. The 2-year Treasury yield, which is hypersensitive to near-term Fed policy, jumped 16 basis points to 4.216%.
And for those tracking at home, a basis point is 1/100th of a percentage point. So 16 basis points is roughly a sixth of a percent. In the bond market, that is a massive, violent swing.
Absolutely massive.
We saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which had literally just hit an all-time intraday record of 52,000,
Right.
immediately reverse and close down 1%. There was a massive liquidity rotation out of tech stocks.
Right.
Okay, so growth stocks
Yeah.
get hammered because their valuations rely on earnings projected far into the future, and higher interest rates make those future earnings worth less today. But capital doesn't just disappear, it rotates.
True.
So who actually wins when the Fed promises to keep rates this high.
Initially, value sectors and financials see a surge. Banks like JP Morgan and payment processors like Visa temporarily rallied because higher interest rates create wider net interest margins.
Right.
Think of a bank like a middleman. If the Fed keeps rates elevated, the bureau might charge a consumer 7% for a mortgage, but they are only paying out, say, 2% in yield to the people holding cash and savings accounts.
Yeah.
That massive 5% gap is pure profit margin for the bank.
But I'm looking at the charts. And even the financial sector eventually pulled back from its daily highs. If banks are making wider margins on their loans, why did their stocks retreat?
Because of the broader macroeconomic stallout. If the Fed raises rates high enough to kill inflation, they also kill underlying economic growth. If growth slows down too much, businesses stop expanding, they stop taking out new loans, existing loan default rates spike, and investment banking deal flow dries up. The banks quickly realize that making a wider margin on a loan doesn't help if nobody is walking through the door to borrow money.
That makes total sense. So Warsh is staring down an overheating consumer and sticky inflation, and he's threatening to hike rates to cool it all down. But the Fed doesn't operate in a vacuum.
No, they don't.
He is modeling inflation domestically, but geopolitics might be about to throw a massive wrench into those models.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at global energy markets.
Let's do it.
The sources detail a leaked interim peace agreement between the United States and Iran. Now, to be absolutely clear.
Yes, very important.
There is intense political commentary surrounding this deal from all sides of the political spectrum, both left-wing and right-wing, but we are focusing solely and impartially on the market mechanics and the economic ripple effects.
Exactly. Just the math.
Yeah.
No politics. And the math here is staggering. This tentative agreement is poised to unlock $300 billion in reconstruction funds. But, I mean, more importantly for the global economy, it paves the way to reopen the Strait of Hormuz to consistent, unimpeded oil exports.
Yeah, the Strait of Hormuz is the world's most critical oil choke point. The mere expectation of this deal reopening that waterway caused a sharp reaction.
Too bad.
The International Energy Agency, the IEA, actually cut its 2026 global oil demand forecast by 1.1 million barrels per day.
Wow.
And in response to the peace deal leaks and that demand cut, Brent crude oil prices dropped sharply, hovering right around $79 to $81 a barrel.
Which feels entirely counterintuitive to me. Well, the IEA also noted that OECD government oil inventories, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, have fallen to their lowest level since December 1990.
Right.
These governments have been rapidly releasing their emergency reserves to buffer the market against supply shocks. You would think historically low emergency supplies would drive prices sky high. Why is oil dropping?
Because the prospect of the Strait of Hormuz fully reopening acts as a massive bearish weight on the price of crude.
Oh, I see.
The market anticipates a flood of new supply that will easily refill those depleted OECD inventories. And this is where the macroeconomic feedback loop becomes incredibly complex for Kevin Warsh.
Right, back to the Fed.
When global oil prices drop significantly, it acts as a de facto tax cut for the everyday consumer.
Right. If you're listening to this on your commute and you've noticed it suddenly costs $10 less to fill up your gas tank, you might think you've won.
Yeah.
You have more disposable income in your pocket.
Exactly. And what do consumers do when they have an extra $10 in a strong labor market?
They spend it.
They spend it. They take the money they saved at the gas pump and they spend it at the grocery store or on retail goods. This lower cost of energy directly fuels the exact robust retail spending that is causing the Fed so much anxiety.
Oh, wait. So let me make sure I have this straight.
Yeah.
We're looking at a scenario where peace in the Middle East actually lowers global oil prices.
Mm-hmm.
That is objectively a good thing for your wallet. You have more money.
Right.
But what Kevin Warsh is betting on is that you're going to take those savings and spend them. And that keeps broader inflation across the economy hot.
Yes.
And because inflation stays hot, the Fed is forced to potentially hike interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Are we genuinely trapped in a cycle where good news at the gas pump is actually bad news for your mortgage rate?
Economically speaking, yes. It is the core paradox of a consumer-driven economy.
That is wild.
The Fed's entire goal right now is to destroy demand to bring prices down. If geopolitics suddenly hands consumers a massive energy dividend, it undermines the Fed's efforts.
Right. It works against them.
Warsh is looking at dropping oil prices not as a victory over inflation, but as a catalyst for more consumer spending, which keeps core inflation incredibly sticky. It forces his hand to keep borrowing costs painfully high to compensate for the stimulus of cheap oil.
Man, it is a phenomenal web of cause and effect.
Okay.
So what does this all mean? Let's pull this all together. We started at the dizzying heights of the SpaceX IPO, watching options hedging and retail momentum squeeze a company to a $2.8 trillion valuation, decoupling the stock price from the fundamental losses of a rocket's violent hot staging failure.
Right. And then we examine the rapid evolution of AI tools like Speechify and Cursor, which are, you know, democratizing coding and information at lightning speed. And we contrasted that with the slow, deliberate reality of financial compliance, where human officers demand structured outlines just to prevent a FINRA audit.
Exactly. We looked at the shifting cost of capital, guided by a new hawkish Fed chair who refuses to show his poker hand, setting massive ripples through tech stock valuations and banking profit margins. And finally, we connected the geopolitical unblocking of the Strait of Hormuz directly back to your local retail store, showing how cheap gas can ironically force the Fed to keep your borrowing costs high.
It really is all connected.
It is. You are now armed with a true 360-degree view of June 2026. By understanding how the cost of capital, energy prices, and these massive technological leaps are entirely interdependent, you can navigate your own investments, your career, and your daily news consumption without being blindsided by the headlines.
Understanding the underlying mechanics, the absolute why behind the market movements, is the only way to separate the signal from the noise.
Well said. And we want to leave you with a final mind-bending thought to explore on your own. We've talked about AI tools perfectly synthesizing rocket code and instantly digesting complex news. We've talked about the friction of human compliance officers manually reviewing outlines to prevent regulatory disaster.
Yeah.
If these AI models can perfectly ingest thousands of pages of financial compliance laws and synthesize real-time global market-moving data in absolute milliseconds, how long is it until a central bank simply replaces its 18 human dots on the plot with a single highly advanced AI model that just sets our interest rates in real time?
That is a fascinating question.
Something to chew on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.